a conservative law firm is suing the Wisconsin Elections Commission administrator for access to the state's voter registration list. It's Monday, May 6. This is Wisconsin Today. Good morning. I'm Mallory Chang. Coming up, the Ho-Chunk Nation will decriminalize cannabis and tribal police will no longer issue citations for possession. Robert DeAndrea will have more. And a federal appeals court has lifted a court order that would have temporarily blocked the final phase of a controversial transmission project. Stay with us.
On Wisconsin Today, you hear the biggest stories in our state delivered with the context you need from a source you can trust. This journalism is community supported. Join in now with your gift at wpr.org/givewitoday.
A conservative law firm is suing Wisconsin's top elections administrator for access to the state's voter registration list. Rich Kramer reports it comes from the Public Interest Legal Foundation. They filed similar challenges across the country.
The lawsuit claims Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf is violating public records requirements under the National Voter Registration Act for charging more than $12,000 for state voter data. Wisconsin has been exempt from the act since its creation in 1994 because the state had same-day registration when it was passed by Congress. Foundation President J. Christian Adams says the exemption should be invalidated.
Wisconsin and Minnesota have an exemption from transparency obligations because of things they did 30 years ago or more that are no longer relevant to current circumstances.
Critics of Adams' group worry the lawsuit could make it easier for conservative organizations to purge Wisconsin's voter rolls. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
President Joe Biden will be in Wisconsin this week. It will be his fourth stop in the state this year. A recent statement from the White House said the president will visit Racine on Wednesday to, quote, deliver remarks on his Investing in America agenda. The visit comes days after former President Donald Trump held a rally in Waukesha during a break in his ongoing criminal trial. The president and former president are focusing on swing states as they head toward a rematch election. A recent NPR and Marist College poll found Biden was leading Trump 50% to 48% among registered voters. Biden was last in Wisconsin in April when he visited Madison to announce a new plan that would knock out unpaid student loan interest for millions of borrowers. The Ho-Chunk Nation will decriminalize cannabis and tribal police will no longer issue citations for possession. As Robert DeAndrea reports, advocates are cheering the move as a step toward legislation.
Cannabis is illegal under state and federal law. Tribal leaders advise that local, county, and state law enforcement could still issue citations. Earlier this year, Republican lawmakers considered ways to regulate medical marijuana. They were unable to find consensus within their own party on how to do it. But public opinion has shifted greatly around legalization. Rob Perro is the founder of the Indigenous Cannabis Industry Association. He says tribes should be ready for when the day comes that medical or recreational cannabis is legal.
Basically, it's like if the state does it, then we're quote unquote allowed to do it. But really, if the state is prepping for it, why wouldn't the tribes be doing the same thing?
Tribal law experts don't expect the Ho-Chunk to move quickly toward cultivating or selling marijuana. Robert DeAndrea, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Wisconsin Supreme Court will hear a case challenging the legality of an early voting ban used by the city of Racine in 2022. The court's liberal majority issued an order last week, accepting the case directly, bypassing the Court of Appeals. The chair of the Racine County Republican Party sued over the city clerk's use of the van. It was used as a mobile in-person absentee voting site several times in 2022. In January, a circuit court judge ruled that while state election laws do not prohibit mobile voting sites like the van used in Racine, it does not allow them either. Racine's clerk appealed that decision. The Supreme Court's order granting the case said oral arguments would take place this fall. A federal appeals court has lifted a court order that would have temporarily blocked the final phase of a controversial transmission project. Joe Schultz has more on the case.
In March, a U.S. District Court judge blocked a land exchange needed to complete the Cardinal Hickory Creek transmission project. The order prevented the line from crossing through a Mississippi River wildlife refuge. This week, a 3-judge panel on the Chicago Appeals Court said the injunction blocking the land swap was not justified. Howard Lerner is an attorney representing the environmental groups challenging the project.
Companies here have simply been acting irresponsibly by plowing forward and trying to steamroll this project and go through the refuge before there can be effective judicial review.
The Cardinal Hickory Creek transmission line runs more than 100 miles from Dane County to Iowa. The project was more than $160 million over budget at the end of March. Joe Schultz, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, for over 30 years, a Wisconsin man lived as someone else's identity. Alex Crow will have more on this story. Stay with us.
Gardening in Wisconsin is a year-round job, and Garden Talk is here for you throughout every season. We help you battle relentless pests and pick your favorite mulch. We also cover how to care for houseplants and successful methods for starting seeds inside. We want to know what keeps your garden growing. Join me, Larry Mueller, for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network, Fridays at 11 and Saturday mornings at 6, or online anytime.
A Wisconsin man stole another man's identity for over 30 years, but nobody believed him. Morning Edition and Wisconsin Today host Alex Crow has more on the story.
In a case that seems like it could be out of the plot of a movie, a man named William Woods, who was locked up for nearly 2 years, including a stint in a psychiatric hospital, all while he insisted another man had stolen his identity, has finally been released. This after a DNA test proved a man in Wisconsin was pretending to be Woods for decades. Joining us now is LA Times reporter Brittany Mejia, who's done a deep dive on the story. Brittany, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you explain a little bit about how William Woods ended up being charged with the crime when he reported his own identity as being stolen?
Yeah, this is actually probably one of the crazier cases I've ever worked on. This is a case of a man, as you mentioned, his name is William Woods. He actually was arrested by police here in Los Angeles and accused of stealing someone's identity, when in fact this other person had stolen his identity in 1988 when they worked together at a hot dog cart in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so this is a guy who took over with his identity. He got employment, insurance, social security number, driver's license, titles, loans, and credit using William Woods' name, when in fact this other guy's real name was Matthew Kearns.
Your piece was riveting. My main question is, when William Woods tried to reclaim his identity, he wasn't believed. He was actually forced to serve time for a crime that he did not commit. So why do police say that he wasn't believed in the first place?
Yeah, that's the part that was so interesting. And one of the things I've tried to push in on in this case is asking the LAPD, you know, how this all unfolded. Also, the fact that they arrested and Woods was charged under the name Matthew Kearns. So I was like, that name had to have come from somewhere. But basically, William Woods went into a bank, tried to close some accounts in 2019, told them that someone else had opened them in his name. And the bank, suspicious, like, ends up calling the number on the bank account, which was Matthew Kearns' number. And he tells them, you know, no one should have access to my account. They believe Matthew Kearns over William Woods. The police also seemingly believes Matthew Kearns over William Woods. They speak with Kearns. He faxes them a copy of his fraudulent documents, social security card, Wisconsin's driver's license, Kentucky birth certificate. Then they turn around and arrest William Woods. I think one of the sadder aspects of the case is William was in court telling people, I am not Matthew Kearns, like, I'm William Woods. And people thought he was just mentally unwell. His public defender actually even said that she didn't think he was competent to stand trial. And so a judge ordered him to a psychiatric hospital, and he actually was medicated.
Can you explain exactly how the information about William Woods' life was transferred to Kearns?
So when I actually was able to reach William and we connected, and he was basically telling me his life story. And back in 1988, he was working at this hot dog cart, and he had been working there for years when Matthew Kearns started there in the same business. And William had never, like, really interacted with him. And then William's wallet went missing, and he, like, suspected that Kearns had taken the wallet. They kind of got into, like, an altercation. William ended up getting the wallet back, and he said he felt reassured because his social security card was still in there, his birth certificate was still inside, so he didn't think anything had happened. fast forward and, you know, he comes to realize that from that point, it seems like Matthew Kierans had taken over his whole identity in his life.
Matthew Kierans used this false identity for more than 30 years. He got married. He had a child under this fake name. Do we have any idea what led him to continue this? Was there something he was trying to possibly leave behind in his past?
That's what struck me. I mean, in his plea agreement, Kierans told investigators that, you know, he'd run away from home at 16, traveled across the country, stolen a car in San Francisco, been arrested in Oregon, but never appeared in court. But there was nothing in the plea agreement or nothing in his listed in the criminal history that was so outrageous or so alarming that you would think he'd need to run away from it. And so that's the aspect I think that has really gripped people is like, why do this? Like, to what end? To have a child who it has the last name of the man whose identity he stole is just on another level.
And let's go back to that man whose identity was stolen. He actually pleaded no contest to charges that were filed against him that he did not commit, that were under a fake name committed by somebody else. What does that say about the state of the justice system for people who possibly have mental illness, who are homeless, and how they're treated in the justice system or how they're trusted?
You know, I looked at the court transcripts. I saw the hearing where William pled no contest. And he had at that point, you know, had already spent 428 days in jail, 147 days in a psychiatric hospital. And he basically told me he pled out so the case against him would be dismissed. And he was telling me, you know, I kept saying I'm not guilty, but they wouldn't believe it. And this, to me, it was just so striking, like the fact that he basically saw that as his only escape. And I just have to say whatever I need to say to be able to get out and not keep serving time for a crime he didn't commit.
So where are both Woods and Kierans at this point in time?
Kieran thought that case is still in progress, but in William Woods' case, an LA Superior Court judge vacated his conviction, what he had pleaded no contest to. Basically, the judge said he was more than happy to sign the order vacating the conviction and just basically commenting on how crazy the case was. And I actually talked to William after, and he was like, I mean, I'm happy, but he was like, I knew I was innocent. I think it's been striking to see how this case has played out and also will continue to play out.
Brittany Mejia, the reporter with the Los Angeles Times, following this story for us. Thank you so much for reporting on it, and thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on.
And that's today's podcast. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today. I'm your host, Mallory Chang. Our producers today were myself and John Davis. Catch us every weekday morning wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Take care.